Welcome. This is a ConSense Bulletin podcast. I'm Chauncey Rucker, publisher of the ConSense Bulletin website. I'm having a conversation today with Christina Mogro-Wilson. Christina is the director of research at the Connecticut Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. She's particularly in charge of the personnel preparation programs. So today, Christina, I'd simply like you to tell us a little bit about the center's personnel prep activities over the last several years.
Thank you. I'm going to talk about our center, and the full title of it is the Center to Inform Personnel Preparation, Policy and Practice in Early Intervention and Preschool Education. And our principal investigator on this study is Mary Beth Bruder, and she's a co-principal investigator with Vicki Staten, who is in Western Kentucky University. The Center to Inform Personnel Prep began about 6 years ago and was funded in January 2003 and was initially is funded by the federal government in the Office of Special Education Programs, or OSEP. This grant, we're now in our, as you can see, in our sixth year. We have it on our continuation year, and it was funded to see what is occurring in the field of personnel preparation. We wanted to gather information and find critical gaps in knowledge about personnel preparation for people who are working in the field with children with disabilities. So those folks that may be physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech and language pathologists, social workers, a variety of different disciplines are working with children and families with disabilities ages 0 to 3 and 3 to 5. And we wanted to see what kind of preparation that they were receiving at the state, both within their state and nationally. And so we wanted to synthesize and analyze, which hadn't been done before, what are the is there any certification or licensing requirements for personnel that work with infants, toddlers, and families, and preschoolers who have special needs and their families. We wanted to learn more about the quality of their training programs and how we help prepare these professionals to work in the field, and a little bit about supply and demand. So along the way, in these past kind of 6 years, as we're concluding our projects, we've done a variety of different things. We've compiled a database of current licensing and certification standards for all early intervention and early childhood special education personnel. We've developed a comprehensive profile of current training programs and technical assistance programs. And all of this is on our website. Under this kind of large center, we've done a variety of different studies. We're doing a total of 10 different projects or 10 different studies, and we're currently finishing up kind of our final three. And so I want to talk about kind of our last three projects that we've been working on. And if you're interested in kind of our older projects, which are, all up on our website that have our data reports of our findings, in addition to one-page at-a-glances that summarize our study findings and also PowerPoint presentations for each of our projects. So studies 1 through 5, you can find out more information on the website, but I'll start out with study 6, which we were interested in training and technical assistance for Part C and 619 providers. What are they receiving to work with children with disabilities? And so to kind of get at that information, we decided to interview Part C and 619 state coordinators in every state. And we did telephone interviews with the state coordinators to find out more about their systems. For Part C, providers serving kids 0 to 3, we interviewed the coordinators, and we were able to interview 51 different state coordinators, and we also interviewed coordinators for 619, or for providers that are serving children with disabilities that are 3 to 5, and we were able to interview 45 different states. And with that information, we asked them many questions about their training system. You know, did they have dedicated resources? What kind of funding did they allocate towards their training system? How do they monitor their training? How do they come up with ideas for training symposiums? Or was it mostly workshops? What kind of training formats did they use? And how do they measure their outcomes and so on? And so there's a variety of different components and questions. And what we found was we developed a working kind of definition of what a training system means and what a technical assistance system means. And based on that, we determined which states we thought, based on our definition, had a training system and what had a technical assistance system. And what we found was for Part C, out of the 51 states, 20 states had a training system based on our definition, and 12 states had a technical assistance system. Similarly, in the 619 states, we have found that 23 states had a training system and 20 states had a technical assistance system. And so looking at, you know, why weren't there more states with a training system? Why weren't there more states with a technical assistance system? What we found was that there was kind of three major issues or problems that states were having. One was they were having difficulty identifying and measuring outcomes, both, you know, of just simply of the training itself, but then, you know, we didn't even look even further to see, you know, if they're measuring actual outcomes at the child level. In addition, we saw issues with quality assurance measures, you know, either not having a lot of quality assurance measures in place for the training and technical assistance. And in addition, we also saw having a mechanism or a way to identify training and technical assistance needs within the state. Many states weren't able to or are able to do that. And so those are kind of the main themes that came out of that study. We, at the same time, conducted a study of providers. Oh, do you have a question?
Yes. For my benefit and probably a few others, could you say just a little bit more about what a Part C and a 619 provider is?
A Part C provider provides services for children ages with disabilities ages 0 to 3, and a 619 provider provides services to children with disabilities ages 3 to 5, and it has to do with the funding mechanism that providers 0 to 3, and then they enter kind of the preschool age, and then they become the 3 to 5 group. And so there's state coordinators for Part C providers and state coordinators for 619 providers.
It's Part C of what?
That terminology, Part C and 619, comes from the IDEA legislation, which is more of a, I guess, a policy language, the way we divide it up. And providers that are providing Part C and 619 services inherently do kind of different things, right? Because children ages 0 to 3 are getting, you know, instead of an IEP, they're getting an IFSP, an individual family plan. And then when they become school aged, 3 to 5, the 619 providers are working in individual education plans, an IEP, and doing more school-based services. I want to talk about Study 7, which was pretty interesting because we decided to ask the providers themselves about how competent and confident they felt in the field. And so we asked both Part C and 619 providers nationally about their feelings of working with kids with disabilities and how prepared they felt. I think, you know, an important piece is that, you know, you can be a physical therapist, you can be an occupational therapist, you can be a speech and language pathologist and, you know, get your education or social worker and never get a class on children with disabilities. And so the idea of personnel preparation is then, you know, some states believe they should get an additional certification or licensure to be able to work with kids with disabilities in this age group. Some states do additional training. Some states, you know, everybody's doing something a little bit different. And so the purpose of the Center for Personnel Prep is to kind of summarize what different states are doing, find out what works, what isn't working, and to help states that, you know, are doing something different and want to change. But we also wanted to get a view of what providers were doing and how they felt in the field. And so we put together a web-based survey that we emailed to state coordinators and asked them to kind of pass along. And it was difficult to distribute and get to providers. So many, many emails went out, and it was an online survey. And in the end, we ended up with providers that were serving kids 0 to 3 or Part C providers. We had about over 1,084 providers that filled out that the survey. And providers serving kids 3 to 5 or 619 providers, we had 735. And the questionnaire had a variety of different questions, background questions and all of that. But the main core component of the questionnaire was a set of questions that was developed in connection with, our PI, Mary Beth Bruder, and Carl Dunst down in the Puckett Institute, of items that were in 7 different main core component areas, which we felt that providers, should know something about each of these areas, about family-centered practice, assessment and evaluation, the IFSP, IEP, instructional practices, natural learning environments, collaboration, teaming, and early literacy. And those were our main kind of core content areas. And then we asked a few questions within each area, some questions having to do with competence and some having to do with confidence. And those words are really similar, which makes it a little bit difficult, but competent, how competent does the provider feel? How do they feel that they are able to provide the certain practice? And confidence, do they feel good about how they're providing it? And what we found was pretty amazing on our end. From a survey methodologist point of view, usually when you provide a set of questions and give people a set of response options ranging from 1 to 7, which is how it was set up, with, disagree all the way to strongly agree, people tend to rate themselves very highly on a scale, and you don't get much variability. You get people rating themselves, almost all the time and strongly agree all the time. But what we saw was people rating themselves pretty low on the scale. And overall, providers indicating that they are more confident than competent in almost all of the 7 different areas. And particularly, we saw a big discrepancy in natural learning environments where they felt more confident than competent. We're talking about 46% of providers feeling that they almost always are always the 2 highest on the 7-point scale, were confident in natural learning environments, and 14% felt competent in this area. And so there's definitely more detail on our website about, which practice areas. We are seeing great stuff in collaboration and teaming that providers are reporting. But I think what really came out besides, these 7 areas was that we asked them, what kind of training are you receiving, and the kind of training that they're receiving, and we also saw this on our other projects, are mostly kind of workshop, lecture-like trainings. And we know in the field of adult learning that that's not really what works to train folks to learn kind of new ideas and more hands-on like trainings, would probably result in kind of better outcomes for the providers. So we're still working with that data, and hopefully we'll be publishing something soon on that as well. Let's see. Study 8 was conducted by our co-principal investigator, Vicki Staten, about the alignment of early childhood special education, higher education curricula with national personnel standards. And here she's looking at doing a content analysis of higher education syllabi and how they align with national standards for training personnel. And so that is an ongoing project, so I cannot speak too much about that. And so I'll move on to study 9, which we just kind of finished up and are just looking at the data. And it was a direct kind of offspring from study 7, which I just spoke about, of of providers' competence and confidence, we said, you know, well, let's ask parents about how they feel their providers are. Let's ask parents' point of view about their providers' competence and confidence. And so thus came the study 9, which is parent perceptions of competence and confidence of service providers. And we asked parents whose children are receiving Part C services or 0 to 3, and we received 201 surveys. And we asked parents whose children are receiving 619 services or are 3 to 5 years old, and we received 174 surveys. Now, those numbers seem pretty good, although this was a national study, so then they are pretty low. And, it, you know, as we know, it's hard to you know, parents' time is, you know, very valuable, and it's hard to get, you know, them to fill out an entire survey, especially an online survey, which can be pretty demanding. But the information that we have is, you know, kind of a beginning information about how they feel, how competent and confident they feel their service providers are. And you know, interesting enough, parents are rating how competent and confident their service providers are higher than the providers themselves on our previous study were. But still, it's pretty low in the 50s and 60% of being competent and confident almost always or all of the time in the same seven different areas. I guess the weakest areas were with early literacy, the IFSP IEP area, and family-centered practices. And so I think, you know, it's really speaking to areas that we need to concentrate our training on. Both the practitioners are saying that, the parents are saying that. And so I think people are, you know, we're hearing that. And so then the purpose now of our center is to go on and make some important policy implications for the next steps of the information that we're getting. And then our final study, study 10, is an ongoing study and came directly out of study 6, which I just talked about, which was training and technical assistance, and in which we talked to almost all states about the training and technical assistance survey. And when we presented that at national conferences, you know, states, people were very interested, especially states that felt they, you know, wanted to learn from other states about what they were doing for training and technical assistance, you know, to help this dialogue between states. And so we thought it would be extremely helpful if we could kind of put together some case studies, some in-depth looks at some states that were doing a particularly good job or unique job at their training and technical assistance of providers. And so we chose states that, based on a study 6, we met the definition for having a training on technical assistance, and we interviewed, now instead of just interviewing the coordinators at the state level, we interviewed the coordinators and we interviewed 4 to 8 people per state. We interviewed parents, professors in higher education, directors of training networks, and other people. We have done interviews in Nebraska, Wisconsin, Minnesota, California, Pennsylvania, and Kansas, and are continuing to do a few more states which is why it's is ongoing. We are currently looking at the interviews. These were all done over the phone. Pretty long qualitative like interviews were transcribed, and now we're undergoing a pretty long qualitative analysis of the information. But some of the emerging themes that we're seeing is that these states have a commitment to relatively stable funds. You know, of course, we're going to see that money is important to have a good training and technical assistance system. That we're also seeing longevity of leaders in the system, not a high turnover rate, people that have been in their jobs for a while and are able then to collaborate and make relationships with other people throughout the system is definitely helpful. We're seeing an efficient use of resources through collaboration across different agencies, different ways of dealing with resources, and so we're looking at examples of that to kind of flesh that out a little bit more. We're also seeing collaboration being supported through longstanding relationships and multiple roles. People that have been either, you know, in their jobs have switched, you know, either they've been in higher ed, they're going to coordinator positions or the other way around, or they're going, or their parents that are now, you know, kind of moving around to different agencies. And this is helping collaboration and kind of the longevity of their leaders. And that technical assistance is really important in implementation of changes, that without, you know, the technical assistance system to support the training system, you know, it won't work as well. And also there, we're noticing that training, and also in addition, not just training, but the follow-up of training is really extremely necessary. The monitoring, the outcomes, the evaluation component, which, you know, something that we found in our previous study as well, but now it's just being echoed in this. So I think, you know, we're going to have some pretty interesting findings, and hopefully out of there, we're going to get, you know, a manuscript or something that could be useful for other states to see kind of some emerging issues. And so as we conclude sort of our personnel preparation center, of which, you know, this has been 6 years, I think there's a lot of chances for us to really sit down and think about what the policy implications of this are, what the next steps are. You know, it's not all bleak and sad. The good news is that there's people that are out there that really care about children with disabilities. They're doing great work, and we know what works well. You know, what training works well in the literature for adult learning, and now it's just being able to implement that and what that means for the infrastructure for the states. And so on. So I think hopefully what's going to come out of this is some, you know, maybe more webinars, some policy recommendations directly to OSEP, the Office of Special Education Programs, and other key stakeholder groups that are going to look forward for the next steps for personnel preparation.
Impressive stuff. Thank you very much. The only thing I think we didn't cover is the website, so they could get this information.
Probably the best way, we're working on our website right now, so the best way to get our information is to go to our center website, which is www.uconused.org. So the spelling of that is UConn, so for UConn, and then UCED is UCEDD.org. And then click on ongoing projects, and we're under early intervention or early childhood projects, and we have a listing there of all of our publications. So again, we're under the early childhood projects, and you can find our data reports there, our summaries there, and we've had a variety of different think tanks as well with leaders in the field, where you can find summaries of those as well on the web.
Thank you very much. We'll have to check and see what you're going to do in the next series.